Hello and welcome. I'm Dennis Prout, Certified Financial Planner.
And I'm Shea Pataja, the co-host of
New Retirement Radio,
the podcast.
Investment advisory services offered through Capital Asset Advisory Services, LLC, a registered investment advisor. Securities offered through Genios Wealth Management Incorporated, member FINRA SIPC. Opinions expressed on this program do not necessarily reflect those of Capital Asset Advisory Services. The topics discussed and the opinions given are for informational purposes only and are not intended as financial, tax, accounting, or legal advice, and are not intended to address the specific needs of any listener. Listeners are encouraged to discuss their individual needs with an appropriate professional.
And welcome aboard to New Retirement Radio on WTCM. Hail, hail, the gang is all back from Prout Financial Design, courtesy of Zoom. So we'll be able to hear. I can see you guys. Unfortunately, the WTCM studio camera is not equipped, or computer is not equipped with a camera. We'll have to rectify that. But welcome aboard, Dennis Prout, Shea Pataja, and Heidi Thompson.
Good morning. Hey,
it's great to be here. Thank you, Ron. Well, today is 4/16/2020. It's great to be here. Obviously, Thursday morning, we have Heidi Thompson joining us, a representative locally at the office here. Heidi is with us today. She's going to be talking about student loan and 529 plan changes and impacts. Welcome, Heidi.
Thank you.
Great to have you along with us. And Shay, well, by the way, before we move on, today is Heidi's birthday. Happy birthday to you, Heidi.
Well, thank you very much.
That's right, because it's my birthday. My birthday.
That's great.
Oh, man, we're still not. I love that you are still keeping that going, even though we're on Zoom.
Yeah.
But it was somebody else's birthday.
Sounders, you know? That's great. And Shay's birthday was yesterday. And before we move on,
what's that?
Today we're going to be talking about re-entry, what the stock market folklore is telling us, what the history of the stock market has been, what it's doing now, and then what you can do with what there is today and in the coming months. So today we're talking about re-entry in essence, how are we re-entering? Dr. Fauci has related this to how do we re-enter being involved. Again, what does that look like, and what is the protocol? And obviously, to me, it sounds like almost like the Apollo reentry. They had a specific number, a set of things or programs that they needed to accomplish as they were reentering the atmosphere, and that's kind of what this feels like, because we got to rethink how this looks and feels, and how we're going to respond, and what things are going to look like. And a part of this is the market stats and what's happened. And I thought this would be helpful in terms of our adjustments that we can make, but just taking a look at statistically what's happening. Bear stock markets usually last 10 to 18 months and decline by 25 to 35%. Well, this one happened to its bottom at almost exactly 30%. Business cycle recessions usually last about a year. Typical recession is 2 quarters of declining gross domestic product. Depression is 4 quarters. So 4 quarters of declining GDP. Most likely will be at 2. The shortest one goes back to 1929, about 6 months. So far, we witnessed a bear market decline of actually 34%. This lasted about 5 weeks or so. Business cycle recession probably began in March, and it'll end. When it will end is still under discussion by economists. Obviously, we'll see given the stats. And it's just fascinating to think about when it will begin to bottom, or look like the recession will bottom, be heavily dependent upon when the COVID-19 lockdown will start to end. In this regard, comments by Dr. Fauci a couple of weeks ago were encouraging, one of which I'll reference. Fauci said it makes sense to at least plan how reentry would look. And we're all hearing, I think, Ron, you mentioned earlier on the radio show that they're talking about how football would look in terms of the requirements. I think you mentioned Mike Pence was discussing with the
conference
NCAA.
Commissioners. Yeah, different conferences and the NCAA, yeah.
Yeah, and yeah, on what that would look like. And apparently they're saying they want school to be completely going again before they have football games. Was that correct?
Right. That no more no football until the schools are fully open. And he was optimistic that there would be football in the fall.
Yeah.
Optimistic.
Yeah. And in just thinking about that, well, if you have a stadium typically full of 100,000 people and they can only allow 20,000 and everyone has to be tested, and obviously the football team and all the people on the sidelines and all the rest, what are all the testing and the protocols that will have to be done to keep people safe? At the same time, how expensive would those tickets be and how many people would be watching just to see that spectacle?
Hmm.
So it's kind of fun to think about, and market stats can be helpful. What can you do in the next 2 to 3 months? And as John Sluice mentioned, can you do these things that we'll be mentioning? In many cases, yes. But the better question perhaps is, should you? Bear markets typically, statistically, are quantified as a 20% or greater decline. So we've already seen a bear market. Have we seen a recent bottom? Well, that bottom that we've seen most recently occurred on March 23rd at a price on the Dow of 18,500. And what's resulted, I'm referencing as a cornucopia of opportunities. Cornucopia, the word of the day. 2020 required minimum distributions are gone. So anyone that has a required minimum distribution in 2020 does not now have to take one. This includes all qualified plans unless you're a 5% or greater owner of the company. Even defined benefit plans that typically had to make contributions this year, or owners who are participants in DB plans or defined benefit plans, they don't have to make contributions. But what does this mean in terms of Roth conversions? This could be a great year if your income will be lower to do a partial or full Roth conversion. On withdrawals from IRAs and qualified accounts, for those who are under 59 and a half, there is no 10% penalty this year. Now, that's a great way to think about, can you do this? Yes. Should you is another great question. You've got a 3-year time frame to pay it back in. But take a look at this in terms of your overall financial situation and get counsel on this, obviously, before you do this. You're allowed to take up to $100,000 from these accounts with no 10% penalty and pay it back over a 3-year time frame. It's incredible how much this has changed the whole playing field. Very different.
Hey, Dennis.
Hey, just a reminder that we have a YouTube channel, Prout Financial Design. I interviewed Heidi just about these two topics, RMDs and 401ks. So you can go to Prout Financial Design on YouTube and watch that interview and get more details on that. So.
All right, and we do have a call from Petoskey, if we are ready to field a phone call.
You bet.
All right, let's go to Phyllis is in Petoskey for Dennis Prout and Company on New Retirement Radio. Good morning, Phyllis.
Good morning. This is sort of from what you talked about in a session before on the stimulus money. Two questions. One, my daughter has 6 children, and she only got the stimulus for 4. Is there anything that she can do to get the other 2?
All right. Are they all under 18?
Yes.
Okay. That's probably a specialty for John Sluice, the CPA, but anybody have thoughts on that? The check came through for four kids. But
direct deposit.
Interesting. Yeah. How old are the other two that did not receive it, if I may ask?
They're 15 to 5.
Okay, wow.
Okay.
And so and they've had it. They've had six for 5 years.
Yeah.
So
yeah.
It doesn't make sense. My husband thought maybe when you do how many dependents you have, on one page there's four, and they maybe didn't flip the back to see that there were two more. I don't know.
You know, one thing I would try, short of if you can know, I don't, like John Sluice or some CPA may have an answer, but Jack Bergman, Congressman Bergman's office, they are working remotely. You may take a shot, see if you can get through to somebody by phone and see if they can help expedite your resolution here.
But great thought.
Okay.
Yeah.
That's my only suggestion. I would agree with Ron. Jack Bergman's office or your own accountant or bookkeeper.
Okay.
I'm sure they'd have some ideas on how to help you there. Okay.
And one other question on it. Does it affect next year's taxes? Is that money that you get, is that taxable or is it non-taxable?
Great question. That money is not taxable. It's a credit against 2020 taxes. So given that credit, given that it is a credit, it is not taxable income. Okay.
Okay. So it's a credit on the 2020 taxes.
Correct.
Okay.
Yep. And it's based on either 2018 incomes or 2019. Or if you don't qualify for either one, you'd get a credit next year if 2020 income is within the qualification amounts. But you have 3 years to qualify for that.
But the bottom line is you don't have to pay tax on it as if it was some kind of income that you came upon.
Correct.
Okay.
Correct. Exactly right.
Okay.
All right.
Okay, Phyllis?
Yes, thank you for doing your show and answering the questions.
Well, thank you for listening for calling in today.
Okay. So to start off this part of the show, we're going to have Shay Stats and some very interesting ones, given what's currently going on. If you would, Shay.
All right, here we go. If you were born in 1987 and you turn 33 in 2020, you have lived through five bear markets and three recessions: the 1987 Black Monday stock market crash on Wall Street, the 9/11 terrorist attacks, the 2008 global real estate crisis, and now the 2020 pandemic. You've also lived through four bull markets, including the 11-year bull that ended on February 19th of 2020, four economic expansions, and you have benefited from the lowest interest rates in history. Your life expectancy as of today is an additional 47.3 years on Earth, and that's BTN research.
Wow.
Interesting.
1987, 33 today.
Yep. Turned 33 this year, yep.
And the internet and cell phones have all been part of your life for as long as you can remember, probably.
Yeah.
From your teens on.
Yeah. You know, when I was in high school, my senior year was 98, and they did Career Day, and they brought in all kinds of professionals from the area, and they brought someone in from a cellular company in town, some telephone company. And they said, you know, in the next 10 years, everyone will have their own personal phone and landlines will be almost obsolete. And I leaned to my friend and I said, psh, that is never going to happen. It was just too weird and mind blowing to think that that was going to be true. But sure enough, you know, here we are.
Here we are.
All right. Here we are. I'm old. The United States imports just 15% of our nation's overall food supply. That's from the U.S. Food and Drug Administration. Just 15%. I thought that was interesting. The 343 billion of loans being made to small businesses, companies with less than 500 workers, as part of the CARES Act, will be done at a 1% interest rate. And that's from the CARES Act. Here's a really interesting one. Three out of five Americans, so 59%, now forced to work from their homes during the coronavirus crisis would prefer to continue to work from home when the pandemic subsides, while the remaining two out of five workers, 41%, would choose to work in a traditional office environment away from home, and that's from Gallup. I would imagine if you are in a city and you've got to take those drives every day, you know, those commutes, if you're driving, train, whatever, be very appealing to consider staying home.
So 60% would prefer to work at home. Is that what you were saying? Three out of five?
Yeah.
Wow.
It's an interesting revelation from the pandemic.
Mm-hmm.
All right. And here is one about gas, of course, at the pump. The national average price of gasoline has dropped for 44 consecutive days between February 26th and Friday of April 10th, falling 59 cents a gallon to $1.88 a gallon. That's from AAA. I don't know what it is right now. Does anyone know?
The average?
Yeah, like what's it in Traverse City gas price?
It's like $1.60. Somebody said $1.14 in Cadillac, but it was $1.60 in Cadillac. And remember, was it 18 and 19 is 37 plus 6, say 43 cents of every dollar you pay, it goes to taxes. So if you're paying $1.14 for a gallon of tax, a gallon of gas, 43 cents of that goes to state and federal government.
Wow.
So gas is like, you know, like 60, 70 cents. Is that, Dennis, that part of the economy is kind of overlooked now, the oil and gas, but that is, regardless of coronavirus, a problem, isn't it?
You mean the overall economy in the energy sector? Is that what you're saying?
Yeah. If we didn't have any of this coronavirus stuff, there would be a lot more focus, it seems, on what's happening in the energy sector and the problems there.
You mean if the price had come down that way without the coronavirus?
Well, I just mean if we didn't have coronavirus now and gas was $1.15, our domestic oil producers and gas producers and all the associated jobs and companies aren't doing too well at that price, are they?
No. Oh, no, not at all. Yeah, it's anticipated that they're going to get some form of bailout themselves.
Okay.
And what's interesting to note as well, I just read this morning, I thought it was a very interesting indicator. Buffett's company, Berkshire Hathaway, took their dividend. They have a pretty good ownership percentage in Oxy Petroleum.
Mm-hmm.
And they took their dividend in stock at a 10% discount. So he's investing more money into Occidental Petroleum.
Uh-huh.
OXY, I think, is the symbol. And I thought very interesting. They've already taken quite a loss on their investment that they made initially, but they're also reinvesting the dividend at a discount in more shares of the same company. I thought it was a great primary indicator of how they view investment in the energy sector itself.
Yeah. That's good news. Okay.
So they've been beaten up significantly in terms of price. And obviously Warren Buffett is an opportunist, but he's taking his opportunity right there. It's already happening. Yeah.
I did have some good news.
Yes. We'll take it.
I always feel like Shea stats are a little bit like, wah, wah, Debbie Downer. But the demand for jigsaw puzzles is surging. one game maker's seen sales soar to 370% year over year in the past 2 weeks. So, I mean, there's some good news out there. We've got some puzzle time, family bonding time happening.
Mm-hmm.
It's forcing us together a little bit more. I mean, my adult coloring book game, it's soaring. I'm doing really well with that production. I don't know if there'll be any demand for it, but it's happening.
Okay. Interesting. Any other stats, Shay, or is that it?
That's it.
Okay. Then Heidi, you also had some opportunistic ideas in terms of 529 plans. So tell us about that.
Right. So this is something that I was interested personally because I do have a 17-year-old who is graduating sometime this year and going on to college. And so I was looking at it from the perspective of people who have those 529 plans to help pay for some of their college expenses or their educational expenses. And, you know, those funds have been impacted by the downturn in the market as well. And some more than others, those that have target date 529 accounts, which is they invest based on the age of the child that they're trying to benefit, those have automatically moved more conservative. And maybe those haven't been impacted as much. But pretty much across the board, all sectors have been impacted by the virus and the effects on the market. So it's hard to make up ground in the near term for people who have lost significant value. So you might want to take a step back and look at your strategy on how you're going to use those 529 accounts. So for people who, for the near term bills, maybe you were going to use all the 529 to pay that first year of college. Well, maybe you want to stretch out your withdrawals from those accounts over 4 years, or maybe save them for a junior and senior year if your student is just entering college, to try to give those investments time to recover. Or maybe try to stretch out when you take out those funds in order to try to let those investments gain back some of their value. Also, people are looking at 529s as a source of money. People who are strapped during this time and feel a lot of economic pressure because maybe they're not getting their paychecks. But one thing to remember is that there is a 10% penalty in addition to paying taxes on income and gains if you take money out of a 529 and do not use it for an educational expense. So like Shay was and Dennis were talking about earlier, the 401k, there were some provisions in the CARE Act that allowed you to take money out of those kinds of accounts without a penalty, but they do not stretch to the 529 account. So you want to keep that in mind when you're looking at where am I going to take funds from. So just a few ideas on that. Then I was looking at a Kiplinger article that also talked about refunds. Now, some of the colleges and other educational institutions have been giving refunds to parents for time not spent in the dorms or classes that were canceled. If you get a refund for something that you paid for with the 529 account funds, you want to make sure that you have other educational expenses during this year that can be supplemented for the amount that you got a refund for. Otherwise, you would be open to those penalties if you use it for something else, a non-educational expense. So what you would want to do if you're in that situation where you got a refund, you might be able to take that refund and just put it back into the 529 account. And the way that you would do that is you would have to look at the vendor or the provider of your 529 and talk to them if that's available. You would have to make a letter of instruction to them saying, this is what I want to do. I want to replace this refund back into my 529. And you would probably need to document a check or whatever you do to pay or to invest that money. So if you have any questions on that, you would want to contact your provider or your financial advisor and ask them if you got a refund. And then one final, just little tidbit that was in the CARE Act is that included in the CARE Act, they added a provision that allowed the employer to count as a to take away from income from them. So if they pay for a employee's student loan up to $5,250, they can take a deduction or they can take an adjustment to their income as a benefit for paying those loan payments on behalf of their employee. So the The cap applies both to the new student loan repayment benefit as well as other educational expenses, but it has to be for the employee and not for the employee's children. So just a little bit. And if you think that you might want to take advantage of this, you want to make sure that you check with your accountant or some other financial professional to help you navigate this complicated new situation that we're in.
Heidi, that's interesting. So that's a tax deductible, in essence, contribution that an employer can make for an employee's a college education expense. So right. If you've got an employee who you want to help during this period of time, and you're able to, that may be a great way to deduct that expense for that employee's college education expense. And that can be up to $5,250. Is that the amount you said?
Yep. And I think it would be great if you wanted to recognize employees' extra work or coming in to work during this time. And this would be another way that you could benefit them and get a beneficial adjustment to your own.
So it's not going to be taxable to the employee because it's helping with student loan or student cost, and it's deductible by the company itself.
Right. But it has to be for the employee and not for their children. It has to be for the
employee only. And that is good through the end of this tax year then, through 2020?
That's right. It has to be made. That payment has to be made before January 1st of 2021.
Okay, great. Thank you. In terms of opening the office again, we're anticipating it'll be somewhere in May, depending on the state of Michigan itself. And of course, we'll have all the appropriate protocols to keep everyone safe who needs to come in. Sometimes the conversations need to be personal. We understand that. Face to face, of course, we'll take all those distancing rules into regard as well as a part of us having conversations with you. We can also Zoom, as we're doing right now with Ron, or have conference calls, lots of different ways we can be in touch. And then two, what do we need to do to adjust the things moving forward? If you do want to have a consultation, contact Meg at our office. The phone number there, 231-947-3992. Sometimes those consultations may just be initial in nature. You may simply have a few questions that you want to ask. Of course, we're available for that. And if you want to come in at a later time, we can schedule that too, as the culture allows and what's going on out there legally within how much you can travel and how much we can too. So certainly appreciate you listening to the radio show. What a change 1 month has seen. So what can you do about it? Just some points to think about in terms of your own risk. How have you responded to the risk in your current portfolio? Most everyone will be getting their 331 statements now. So reviewing those in terms of where things are and realizing, of course, the market has responded even more positively since the end of the month of March. So compare your portfolio to how the stock market's done in general. And then have you evaluated your will, trust, other documents with an attorney? Having those kinds of conversations are critical, and especially related to beneficiaries too. And then reassess your emergency funds. Do you have appropriate access given the tide certainly has gone out in terms of liquidity. What can you do now with what there is? Are you remembering to look at all of your options in terms of liquidity and or in terms of taking withdrawals that you may need to take out of your retirement accounts? We've been surprised again and again how just having a third opinion in the room, if you will, versus whether it's your one or two, may shed light on your current situation. So what can you do? Where do you need to draw those funds from? And how do you avoid as much of the penalty or cost as possible if you do have need for emergency funds or if you're able to add to accounts right now? How do you play, in essence, offense and defense almost at the same time, given the amount of volatility we've seen in this stock market? And I can just point, Ron had mentioned earlier, the price of energy, energy prices coming down. Another one might even be precious metals, how those things came down so significantly here about 3 to 4 weeks ago, have recovered quite significantly since then. Just looking at the stock market and its history this morning as I was reviewing it on the screen again is incredible to watch and see. So reviewing some of this history and how are you surviving? How are you doing? And what can you do differently with what there is? It may be a Roth conversion because your income may be lower. Obviously, taxes are lower. And the stock market being as relatively low as it is, there may be a significant opportunity for that, especially for those who don't have to take an RMD this year, a required minimum distribution. Then for those who are considering retirement, you may, for those who can pivot or make some adjustments, there's a significant opportunity there as well. If you can say, well, I can wait 6 months if I really have to, we all get that. Given, let's say you'd planned on May of this year, and depending on how your 401k looks, how do you not lock in losses given where that 401k is invested? Or if you're conservative enough, you can still retire. And that may be the best news that you've heard. We just ran a financial plan for a couple, not even 2 weeks ago, that took into full account the market decline. They can still easily retire if they want to. And that was a fun conversation to have with them. So we actually ran the numbers. We re-inputted all the numbers on their financial assets and reviewed all their incomes from their various sources and given their age. According to the plan itself, they are still well within range of being able to retire, and it's a thing easily done for them. So you might be pleasantly surprised, even in light of the volatility that we've seen in the markets, you can still do it. And I see that hand, yes.
Well, I just want to remind our listeners that you don't have to be a client to do the financial plan process with us. And now is a great time to consider that. You don't have to meet with us in person. We can do this over the phone. We can send you the information. If you're already looking at your taxes and kind of doing the fine combing that we all just do this time of year with money, is that now might be the time to do it, especially if you think you have to pivot and change your plans for retirement. The financial plan process we have is just really awesome, and it will help out. So just want to put that little piece of information out there.
So what does that plan do? It shows you a comparative on what your Social Security incomes would be over your lifetimes, over your expected lifetime. So you can compare that. It'll show you your healthcare costs over your lifetime, the incomes that you really want and need, and especially the travel plans that you might have kind of put on the back burner. It brings those up close and center. Can we do all those things that we wanted to do? And then it takes a look too, given very conservative estimations, where your portfolio should be for your life expectancy. So it brings all that information up so close and personal. It's just fantastic. And is there a question?
Somebody wanted to know, Dennis, on our text line, they'll owe taxes, they say, in 2020. And they're wondering this $1,200 check that they'll get. So if I owe in 2020, does it add the $1,200 I'm getting now? I think they're wondering, like, what's it mean it's a tax credit? So when they file their taxes next year for 2020, they anticipate having to pay. What's the $1,200 do? Does that just reduce their total income? Is that what a credit is?
Yeah, a credit is a credit against the tax owed.
Okay.
So it's not income. Okay.
All right. So whatever, if you made $100,000, it's going to look like you made $98,800.
Right, and it's a credit against tax owed for 2018, 19, or 20.
Oh, okay.
So if your income is so low this year that you have no income tax at all, the credit's still good. The check's still good to you. You don't have to return it to the IRS.
As always, you will check with a professional accountant if you're
exactly.
When it's time.
Thanks so much for listening. You can find us online at proutfinancialdesign.com. That's P-R-O-U-T, financialdesign.com. Also, you'll be able to find us on iTunes and SoundCloud.